Joining us today is Dr. Arif Asif. Dr. Asif is chief of nephrology and hypertension at Albany Medical Center and board certified in both internal medicine and nephrology. Dr. Asif is past president of the American Society of Diagnostic and International Nephrology. He most recently served as professor of medicine and director of the interventional nephrology program at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine in Florida. I was just there. To participate in today's discussion, call 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wmc.org/VoxPop. Or you can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. And here's the way I would do it if I were you at my age anyway. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And so here we are with a truly remarkable man, Dr. Asif, who really is the chief guy in kidneys. And I want to ask you a question here, Doc, and that has to do with the kidney donor evaluation program, which you're on. If I want one, how do I get one?
You know, Alan, the way it works is that kidneys actually come from two sources. One is a living donor, if somebody's kidneys have failed. The other one is a cadaver, somebody who died. You know, one could get kidney from them. In terms of living donor, you have to have complete evaluation of the donor. You have to make sure that they don't have any problems, that they're not going to develop any problems. So if you took a kidney from them, are they going to be in any trouble? And that's our task within the Division of Nephrology. We work very closely with Dr. Conti's team, who is our transplant surgeon. And we kind of go through a series of tests, starting with simple history, physical examination, and some sophisticated tests to find out if a donor is okay to donate a kidney. You have to make sure, in case of females, you know, pap smear, mammograms, those things are available. And all the infections, including hep C, HIV, you have to screen for those. You have to do the test for those. So once those are cleared, matching is performed because you have to match the kidney to the recipient. Sure. You could then, after a successful clearance, proceed with transplant.
So let me just give you a hypothetical. Let's say I have an identical twin brother. I do. And let's say his kidney failed and I wanted him to have one of mine, or even more important, the other way around. Could that be done? I mean, are you able to call your designee?
You know, absolutely. That would be a scenario that, you know, in case of identical twins, you know, the genetic material is similar to a great extent, although you still would need some sort of immunosuppression to keep your system rejecting the new kidney. But that would be a good scenario to consider for a living donor kidney.
But what I meant was, since there's a line, obviously, for kidneys, and you want to play fair with everybody, can somebody who is donating a kidney specify somebody that they want the kidney to go to?
It depends again. There are paired donations occurring in the country right now where if you could donate a kidney to someone else, that matches more closely with you, and then you could take that kidney and match with the other person. So that type of scenario is also available.
But I've heard of guys getting in trouble for offering to sell their kidneys to somebody.
It is, and that is really not a good thing. You know, that has happened in certain countries, and now that process is stopping the sale of kidneys and organ trafficking and so forth.
Well, in any case, ladies and gentlemen, we have one of the top kidney guys in the country sitting right here with me, professor, director of the program at Albany Med, and it's up to you, 1-800-348-2551. I'm sure you have some kidney questions. These phones will be loaded by the end. I guarantee that. Let's go to Caroline in Sharon, Connecticut. Okay, Caroline, you're on the phone.
Hello. Is this about kidneys only or about hypertension?
It's about hypertension, too. Go ahead. Ask your question.
I've been on a blood pressure lowerer for several years. I first was given lisinopril, which I understand is an ACE inhibitor, and it gave me a nasty little cough, and I have other friends who've gotten that cough also. So my doctor switched to Losartan, which I understand is an ARB. And I'm curious about these different kinds and whether they're all equally efficacious.
Doctor?
Yeah, it just occurred to me that that's the kind of patient that I'd like to have who knows about the meds, that it belongs to a class of ACE inhibitors and it belongs to a class of ARBs. I am impressed.
I don't know what it stands for, though, ARB.
So ACE is angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitor, and ARB is angiotensin receptor blocker. So both are very successful in controlling hypertension. In addition, these meds offer additional benefits to the kidneys, to the heart. In other words, they protect the kidneys and the heart in simple terms. It is reported that they are associated with cough, dry cough, as you mentioned, and also some electrolyte abnormalities, including high potassium in the blood. Now, it seems that the cough is less when you use an ARB, angiotensin receptor blocker. In your case, I believe.
I had never had any trouble with a cough with the ARB.
Right. So data that we have seen is that if you have cough with ACE inhibitor, you can switch over to an ARB, and it is likely that the cough would disappear. In terms of effectiveness, they're both very good. ARBs control blood pressure just as good as ACE inhibitors do. So it seems that your doctor has got you on the right track to control blood pressure.
Well, do ARBs also affect the electrolytes?
They do, but again, to a lesser degree.
Now, Caroline asked a very interesting question, which is, when she called, she said, is this about kidneys or is it about hypertension? What is the relationship between kidney and hypertension?
Outstanding question, Alan. So it's the same argument, chicken or the egg. Mm-hmm. It's important to know that once you have kidney disease, hypertension invariably comes with it. And it's also important to know that once you have hypertension, one of the organ that gets the hit is actually the kidney. We now understand that kidney plays a major, major role in the pathogenesis and physiology of hypertension. So,
what does pathogenesis mean?
Pathogenesis means things function going in the wrong direction. Physiology
gotcha.
Means normal function. So kidney plays a major role in normal function of hypertension, generation of hypertension, and also as you develop high blood pressure, out of control high blood pressure, kidneys are also playing a major role.
Mm-hmm. Caroline, anything else?
No, thank you very much.
And thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. The chances of getting in on the phone right now are 100%. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 shows you where my head is at. Okay. Again, 1-800-348-2551. So, Doc, I guess I want to ask you this question. What are the classic signs of kidney malfunction?
So very nonspecific. That's why kidney disease, just like diabetes, is a silent killer. Fatigue. Some nausea, vomiting, tiredness, metallic taste in mouth, but these things and weight loss, but these things kind of happen toward the end of renal failure.
What do we call that? That end? End stage?
It's called the end stage kidney disease or uremia. You know, as those toxins accumulate in body, things happen. You know, whatever we eat has a component of toxin in it. And kidneys, we clear that every day through the urine. So if kidneys are not functioning, we retain those toxins. Depending upon the degree of the malfunction of the kidney, those toxins get accumulated in the body, and we start feeling the effect of kidney failure. Normally, you have to lose 80% of your kidney function to get to that point where you are now experiencing the signs and symptoms of renal failure.
Interesting. And when somebody gets proteinuria, bubbles in the urine or that kind of thing, is that a sign?
It is, definitely. It indicates that there's a problem with the kidney and that you need to go to your doctor and find out why that protein is being spilled. Normally, the kidney is a filter, and the filter is pretty good. It doesn't let go of proteins, which is our muscle mass. So if you're losing that, you're in big trouble. You need to find out, why you're losing the proteins.
Well, the phones are pretty busy right now. There are still two free phones, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. And we are back with our expert, professor and chief at Albany Med, director of the Kidney Donor Evaluation Program, Arif Asif, MD, FASN, FNKF. God knows what those stand for, but they must be important. MD, we know. Okay, so let's go to Christine in, oh no, let's go to Ian Pickus, who is here to tell us something about the social media.
That's right. Michael from Facebook checked in to ask, is 20 milligrams of enalapril considered first choice drug for mild hypertension without kidney disease? Current pressure is 116 over 74.
Well, the pressure's pretty good.
Yeah. So, if you look at JNC 7 report, Joint National Commission 7 report on hypertension, they have kind of given this direction and guidance to us in terms of first-line therapy, second-line of therapy, third-line of therapy. And in that, I would agree with you that ACE inhibitors, enalapril is part of that family, is really the first line. We have now learned so much about this class. We know how protective they are of the kidneys, regardless whether you have kidney disease or not. And they're also important in terms of left ventricular hypertrophy. In simple terms, it's that they protect the heart also. So, yes, they are a very important class of blood pressure meds.
Okay, and that's from the social media. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Christine in Wurtsboro. All the phones are ringing, folks, so you have to wait till somebody hangs up before you call again. Christine.
Hi there. My name's Christine. I was just calling because I was wondering why I've had high blood pressure since I was 19, very thin. I was an aerobics instructor, and I eat properly, but still have struggled with high blood pressure my whole life. I was wondering why, what causes it when there's none of the hallmarks of high blood pressure?
Yeah, so Christine, how old are you at present, if I may ask?
I'm 42.
Yeah, and you have had high blood pressure since the age of, since you were a teenager, essentially.
Right.
Yeah. So hypertension falls into different categories. I'm assuming you're Caucasian American?
Yes.
So in that age group, at that time, you have to consider certain things. For instance, monogenic hypertension, what we call monogenic, is abnormalities in one of the genes that can kind of cause hypertension. It can come as inheritance. Also, fibromuscular dysplasia is another important thing. In simple terms, it's the problem with the artery that takes flow to the kidney. So it's the artery that goes to the kidney can have a problem called fibromuscular dysplasia, typically in a Caucasian female teenager. So those would be my thoughts on hypertension in terms of the clinical presentation. It also depends upon what's the range of blood pressure. Is it truly out of control? or is it mild elevation of blood pressure?
And well, it caused a lot of problems with, especially when I had children. I had a severe HELLP syndrome early in 26 weeks of pregnancy. So it has caused a lot of, it does go very high and caused a lot of misery, you know.
So I would definitely seek consultation from your doctor. I would say that you should consult with your doctor and look in more into the arteries.
Okay.
And the renal function itself. You know, where is the renal function now? As we emphasized in the beginning of this show, that when you have renal failure, then degeneration is more from the damage to the kidney itself.
So have you laid off the salt while you were at it?
To tell you the truth, since I really haven't. I don't put table salt on everything, but I do prefer things on the salty side and just kind of depend on my low dose medication.
Interesting, because I once went to
being honest.
Yeah, Christine, I went to my physician, heart guy, years ago, Harry Odebashian, and he said, I had a little bit of an elevation. He said, lay off the salt. I laid off the salt, and whew. So there are some people, right, Doc, who are particularly sensitive to salt.
Absolutely, and importantly, it's not the salt shaker, you know. It's not that thing that sits on the table. It is the processed food that has sodium. It is the restaurant food that has sodium. It is the bread that has the sodium. Interestingly enough, bread has a lot of salt.
I believe you. Hey, Christine, thanks for the great call. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep. Okay, that opens up one free phone. Well, let's see. Jeff in Gardner. Jeff, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. And I apologize for not asking a specific question that's particular to Dr. Asif's area of expertise. My question, I just think he would know, is what if somebody wanted to donate their body to science, at particular at Albany Med? Can you tell me how you would go about doing that?
You know, quite frankly, I'm going to reveal my complete ignorance to that. I don't know, but if you were to call or if you were to email us or do one of those technology messages, I am sure we can find an answer to your question.
Okay, quite right. My fault.
Not at all. Everybody should ask all the questions they want. We'll try to give you a good answer, okay?
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much. All right. Okay, so now, let's see. Well, the phones are still ringing. There's one free phone. Let's go to Allison in Cheshire. Okay, Allison, you're on.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. The reason I'm calling is my kidneys are basically in good shape because I've had to have them tested from taking a whole bunch of anti-inflammatories from a car accident. My question is about a CAT scan or a CT scan that I looked at where you can see a rib, I think it's like my 12th rib, where it like pokes into my kidney and it actually indents it. And you can see it from each of the angles where it's, you know, pushing the kidney and indenting into it. But I'm told, hey, it's no big deal. It could not be pressing on it anymore. And it doesn't really matter. And I'm thinking, I don't know. I just don't think organs should have pressure on them. And my other thought is, isn't the rib there to protect it? And if I get hit there real hard, am I going to pierce my kidney?
Yeah, all valid and very good questions. It's hard for me to comment on that because I don't have the three-dimensional view. I don't have the CT scan in front of me. But I completely believe you that it's, as you mentioned, that it's next to it, poking it, causing an indentation in it. But it seems also at the same time that you have your kidneys are functioning okay. Your labs, I'm assuming, are okay. But something
perfect.
I think you might want to check with your primary to as a concern, because you're right. If something hits you or something happens and it gets poked into the kidney, what would happen?
And that's just, that really hasn't been. It's probably moved back is the answer I get. So as far as the function, I mean, again, it's just a little bit.
Yeah.
But pressure, what do I need to look for? Just pay attention to how my kidney functions and if I see problems in it?
Again, the obstruction to the kidney is by blocking the outflow. It seems that that's not the case. Again, sure. You know, I'm going to have to look at the images. Without the images, it's very difficult to say what to do with that type of scenario.
Allison, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. That leaves two free phones now. Let's go to Ann in Scotia. The number here is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And here comes Ann. Hi, Ann. Hi, Ann. Ann.
Hello.
Hello. You're on.
My question was raised by Alan, the thought in my mind. With identical twin kidney transplant, if the twins had basically the same lifestyle over the years, would there be a greater chance that the donor of the kidney would also develop kidney problems? I mean, is there any way to predict that?
Yeah, so, we have had now long-term studies over 40 years. We have followed the donors, whether they're twins or not. And it seems that these donors seem to be doing just fine. There are studies who have emphasized that there is a little bit increase in blood pressure and probably a little bit of protein spillage. But if you look at the death rate for the donors is better than the death rate for general population, kind of emphasizing the point that, or highlighting the point that actually donors are in pretty good health. For you to donate a kidney, you got to be in perfect health. So in general, kidney donation is safe.
Well, yes, but my specific concern was for identical twins.
So in other words, I am.
Yeah.
Are you, Anne?
No.
Okay,
no.
But I am. But okay, so in other words, if somebody loses a kidney, if one of the twins loses a kidney, is that predictable that that you, me, or my brother would be likely to lose a kidney also?
Not necessarily, unless there's a genetic disease
right.
in the family, and that'll happen earlier on. You know, you'd have some problem, but not necessarily. And I'll give you an example. God forbids one twin doesn't, the other one develops HIV or Hep C.
Sure.
So then you can't use that kidney,
sure.
and the kidney would fail.
No.
And you get a difference in lifestyle. I was just thinking of some genetic thing that would not be apparent at the time of donating the kidney, but something that the donor has develops that is. Was the cause of the first one.
But put another way, in another manner, is there genetic potential for the loss of a kidney based on what your parents or your first degree relatives, for example, had done to them?
Yeah, there are diseases that can happen early, but they usually happen earlier on,
right.
and you lose the kidneys, you know, at a younger age.
Uh-huh.
You know, one of the things is, for example, polycystic kidney disease, you know. If you have cysts, you don't want to donate that type of kidney.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're going to let you go.
Thank you very much.
A lot of
much.
People behind you. Thanks,
Bye.
Ann. Bye. Leaves a free phone. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Josephine in Rhinebeck. Okay, Josephine, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wonder if the doctor would talk about low blood pressure. Are there any problems with low blood pressure?
Right. So, you know, high blood pressure is bad. Similarly, low blood pressure is bad, too. But then the question is, what is low blood pressure? Somebody who used to be, normal blood pressure, let's say 120 by 80, and now they're getting down to 90 by 60, and they're having dizziness upon standing, and they're having a blurring of vision, and they're falling. That's a low blood pressure that's symptomatic. Somebody who's always had 105 systolic, the upper level, upper number, and then divided by 60, that's normal pressure for them. Low blood pressure associated with symptoms of dizziness, those things are bothersome. Usually, such a scenario is seen in elderly patients, diabetics, where we lose the control of nerves, autonomic nerves that kind of control the blood pressure. They don't work that effectively. And once they don't work that effectively, they don't have control to keep blood pressure within normal range. It either goes down too low or it shoots up really high.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because when I was much, much younger, my blood pressure was below what is considered normal now, mm-hmm. and I never had any symptoms. And as I got older, it started to get a little bit higher, but it's still within very good range. Every time my blood pressure is taken, I always get a pat on the shoulder. Oh, good, very good, very good.
So
I was wondering, you know, how these things happen. Does it affect anything, or can any problems occur? Because my blood pressure has always been, you know, I get a pat on the shoulder for it.
Okay, doctor?
So, you know, this is actually excellent. It seems that you started with low blood pressure, asymptomatic.
Yes, with asymptomatic, no symptoms whatsoever.
And which is perfect. And now your blood pressure has come up, and that has come up because with age, our pressure increases because arteries become stiffer and stiffer with age, so pressure goes up. But it seems that you're still within that good range of pressure.
Yes.
I think that's perfect, and you should be happy. You're in that minor cohort. That's normal.
Josephine, we thank you for your call.
Very good. Thank you.
Again.
You gave me some happy news.
Exactly.
Thank you, Doctor. Bye-bye now.
1-800-348-2551. One free phone. On to John in Kingston. John, you're on.
Thank you, Dr. Shartok and Dr. Assis. This is sort of like a theoretical assertion, not quite a question, in that I've been considered bipolar my entire life, 45 years. I made a presentation to my new psychiatrist saying that the divalproic sodium caused a hypertension that presented as mania, and that, in fact, I was not manic, but having symptoms of mania due to the pressure created by the salt, the heavy metal salt of the Depakote. And he bought the argument in that it reset the idea that I was not manic depressive, bipolar, but in fact I was my original diagnosis of schizophrenic. The result is I was put on this new drug, Laduta, which is sugar neutral and non-weight gain, which was killed me and gave me the diabetes I had, still have actually.
Hey, John, I hate to cut you off. There's just a lot of people behind you.
Yes, sir.
What exactly is the question?
The question is, could that theory that the divalproic sodium actually drove the internal hypertension and created a state of mania that was read by the psychiatrist that allowed them to dose me with Depakote and Zyprexa to control a mania that was created by the drug itself.
Okay, John, now we're going to let the doctor answer. Go ahead,
yeah.
John.
Please,
thank you for your question, John. You know, this question requires the expertise of psychiatry, and I am unable to answer that because I don't have those expertise. But I do want to mention that sodium definitely is intricately related to the generation of hypertension.
Well, God bless you both. Thanks for entertaining my question.
I feel very honored
that you did.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Okay. Let's go to Mary in Newburgh. Mary Newburgh, you're on.
Hi. Thank you. I've been scheduled for a catheterization of my heart valves in a major New York hospital because my blood pressure has shot up to 180 over 107. But my entire family has 110 over 60, even my parents who are in their 90s. I'm the only one that's got this, and I wonder if the previous caller set the stage for this. I've been getting hydrocodone for pain from back injuries. For 10 years, it's been nonstop. I've been monitored, things all right. And I wonder if that created the problem for me where my blood pressure went up. The only other thing I've taken long-term like that was calcium ascorbate, which is a form of vitamin C. And that might have caused what the doctor is diagnosing as calcified tricuspid valve. And that's really all I've got to go on. I'm just asking whether there's a connection, if there's any research, if the doctor knows of anything.
Okay,
like
doctor, we're up against a hard break, so you have about a minute to answer this. Very
okay, so here's the short answer. Yes, the pain pills, the type of pain pills that you were mentioning, can cause elevation in blood pressure. Also, the anxiety, episodic anxiety, can also increase blood pressure. So there are two things just by listening to you that I could say that those probably are related and can cause hypertension.
I see. And the calcium ascorbate would not be that much involved?
Less likely, I would say.
Mary, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. That's interesting music, Zach. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Bonnie in Cooperstown. Okay, Bonnie, you're on.
Question. I have on Benicar 20 milligrams, which I take each day, and my pulse has progressively changed since I've been on this drug. It's going up, and it goes up several times during the day, and they haven't been able to explain why. So they suggested changing the time of day I take the pill or splitting the pill. What is your feeling about this?
You know, what is your, what would you call going up?
Well, you know, my normal pulse is 80. And then for if I'm sitting and I take my blood pressure, let's say at some point in the day, not doing exercise, it can go up to 110 without activity, just it spikes, in other words. Even when I'm sleeping, they put a monitor on me, and it goes up 4 or 5 times a day. It hasn't happened in a while, but I notice it's doing it again.
Yeah, so I would definitely look into anxiety issues, and if this continues to give you a problem, it may not be a bad idea to consult your doctor, perhaps switching over to another medication.
Okay. Thank you, doctor.
Yes, thanks, Bonnie.
Yes,
okay, bye-bye.
Yeah.
All right, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Doug in Adams. Hi, Doug.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. Sure. I just started listening. I'm a 40-year-old male in relatively good health, and I actually went to my doctor because I noticed I had foamy urine, and you know, I knew that was an indication of something. He didn't seem all concerned about it, so I was wondering if I should be concerned about it, and if I should, what are the potential problems that's indicating?
So, Doug, I don't know the whole story. I don't know the entire history, but I, based on this just question, I would say it would be wise to just check a simple urine test, just urinalysis, and then take it from there. I think your doctor probably would have a lot better idea about where to go after that urine test. Maybe it's just nothing, but maybe there's some protein in the urine.
Doug, did he test it? I mean, you know, most of us have regular physicals, and they take a sample of urine. He didn't do that?
No, he didn't do that. He didn't take a urine sample. We did blood testing, and, you know, I actually went in because I was ill, and I was diagnosed with hepatitis A, which was throwing my liver function out, but that's been over a year, and I've been subsequently tested, and, you know, liver function, kidney function was normal, so he didn't seem concerned about it. But like I said, every time I urinate, I notice my urine is foamy. So,
Doug, thank you for the call. Go back to the doctor and ask him to look at it.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Larry in Hancock. Okay, Larry, you're on.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, doctor.
Hello.
Hi, Al. I'm a 51-year-old male. Over the winter, I had suffered a dehydration episode that resulted in a renal failure and pneumonia. And one of the things I have had since then, and actually prior to that, was a persistent cough. I'm currently taking Cozar, which I know is an ACE inhibitor. really, this was precipitated by the first caller, when you were talking about the ARBs versus the ACE inhibitors. And I'm just curious, would it be, if I have a persistent cough, whether it would be worth me having my doctor look into changing the hypertension medication?
I think that's what I, considering that you don't have any other history, it may be a good idea to look into an alternative blood pressure medication. We now have a whole line of blood pressure pills, very, very good medications that can control blood pressure. So this seems to be a persistent problem with this class of medication, and if it happens to be the case in your case, then probably a good idea to get rid of it and consider switching over to something else.
Okay.
Yeah.
Terrific. Thank you, Larry.
All right, thank you.
So how important is, I mean, we have a lot of calls, but so how important is controlling blood pressure in life?
Excellent question, and absolutely, the magnitude of the problem is huge. Hypertension causes damage to the heart. Heart failure, heart attack. Hypertension causes damage to the kidneys, kidney failure, dialysis, major, major issue. And brain causing stroke. So if you were to control blood pressure, you make a tremendous increment in reducing the lowering the risk of these problems. Stroke by 40%. Heart attack by 25%. And renal failure by about 50%.
So let's go over some of the symptoms again, some of the things that you might want to do. Exercise?
Absolutely.
Weight loss?
Absolutely.
Salt intake?
Absolutely. Limit the salt intake.
What else you got?
And also stop smoking.
Oh, smoking, yeah.
And in addition to weight reduction, 30 minutes of exercise, I would say.
A day.
For at least five days. So it's not 3 days. It's not 2 days. 5 days will definitely
be. Is 7 days better than 5 days, Doc?
Clearly. Clearly. But 5 days minimum you have to do.
I agree with that. Okay, let's go back to the phones. John in Troy. But before we do, we'll give the number 1-800-348-2551. Okay, John, you're on. John.
Hello. Hi.
Hi, John. Go.
Hi, I was diagnosed with sleep apnea back in 2005 or 6. I've been waking up with cardiological symptoms, high blood pressure, like 165 over 93 in the middle of the night, and I rushed myself to the emergency room, and I always hear the same answer, well, it's episodic anxiety. I don't believe it. I think it's related to continued sleep apnea, which is being misdiagnosed. I just wondered what your opinion was on that.
Are you on CPAP?
Yes, I am, and it doesn't seem to be doing the trick in terms of, you know, keeping these symptoms at bay.
Yeah, and John, I am going to have to agree with you, actually. Sleep apnea is emerging as a huge, huge problem in hypertension world in the United States and globally. So the best thing that one can do, and the mechanism just to go over that, is that fat cells actually cause a sympathetic stimulation, and sympathetic stimulation causes heart to race. That's the mechanism. So you're absolutely right that that's why your heart is racing. To control that, one has to lose weight. That's lose the fat cells. Very, very important.
There's one issue with that, though. I'm like, hold on one second. I'm like 160, and I'm way almost, and my height is almost 5'11", so I'm definitely not overweight.
Yeah, so so then I would move on to the bypass, the CPAP, and I would adjust that treatment, and then I would also treat with blood pressure meds. In this case, specifically a class of meds, we're beginning to learn that they really work nicely, aldosterone receptor blockers. It's a class that really performs very nicely in this.
My primary doctor is trying to put me on Selexa, and I don't think that's going to help me.
I don't know the entire history, so I'm going to have to kind of say that probably your primary care physician knows your case better than I do on the phone 2 seconds, but I would say aldosterone is a good agent, aldosterone receptor blocker.
Okay.
John, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
Trying to get to everybody. Estelle from Clifton Park. Estelle, you're on.
Hello. I'm just wondering if there is an age limit for kidney transplants?
Good question, and I am going to say that I we're now, in terms of accepting, you know, kidneys 60 and above, we're beginning to entertain that. I'm not a kidney transplant surgeon. This question is probably best answered by someone like that, but we're beginning to be a little bit more lenient. We call that expanded criteria donors. Donors who are older, 50s, 60s, and 65. But those donations also then, you know, are handled that way of elderly and expanded criteria donor. Again, I'm not a transplant surgeon, so I don't have much information on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Estelle. Okay. Yep. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Lee in Latham. Okay. Lee, you're on. Go ahead.
Thank you, ma'am. I wonder whether the doctor has an experience with the anticholinergic agents for an overactive bladder muscle, so-called anti-muscarinic agents. Does he have any experience with that kind of medication?
Experience in terms of high blood pressure or experience?
In other words, have you seen, Lee is a physician. He's a neurologist. And the question
bladder
is...
Bladder retention is a side effect in terms of the pros and cons of, especially in Parkinson's disease, where the bladder muscle can be overactive. Do you find that the anticholinergics are safe? Do you have any experience with the newer ones?
In terms of bladder dysfunction?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, you know, they probably are okay if you have side effects, anticholinergic. If they predominate, then I would switch over to another agent. But in general, they do okay.
Do you have a favorite one among them?
I, you know, in problems, I have also used, I've combined Flomax with it, so the retention is less.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lee. Okay. And 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Now, doctor, let me ask you this. If the old days, you would go to a place like, you know, our Pittsfield Hospital. I live over in Berkshire County, and there would be people, long lines of people who were having dialysis. Then along came dialysis in the home, if I'm not mistaken. You could do that. Is the need for dialysis as great as it ever was?
It is, and it's increasing because the chronic kidney disease is out of control. Hypertension, diabetes continue to drive end-stage renal disease population up. We have in excess of 400,000 patients on dialysis in the country right now, and the number is increasing. So, yes, we need hemodialysis. We need peritoneal dialysis. We need home hemodialysis. This is also another component is population is aging. So we have more people now who are going into renal failure and requiring dialysis. And the number of organs available for transplant are limited.
And how much would it be if one had to have home dialysis and you wanted that yourself? What kind of money are we talking about?
I'm sorry.
Not at all.
I don't know the answer to that question.
I just try to ask the obvious questions, which are, you know, obviously it would be better to do it in your home than to, in many people's minds, but much more convenient. But
it is, and lifestyle. Consider those things. You can work also. You can manage your own schedule. You don't have to go to a center three times a week. It's like going to the hospital to the doctor three times a week.
Sure.
What's the population that does that?
Yeah. Exactly. Thank you, Doctor. Let's go to Richard in Albany. Okay, Richard in Albany, you're on.
Hello, Doctor. My 24-year-old niece is having a kidney transplant next week in Philadelphia, and her donor is her mother. And I found it very curious, the fact that they leave the failed kidneys in the recipient's body. I wonder if you might have a comment on that.
Yeah, so those kidneys, when kidneys... fail, Richard, they become small and fibrotic. So the kidney volume is really small, and it's just a scar tissue in some individuals, and we don't really take those out. They just kind of sit there, and we rely on the new kidney, which is placed anteriorly in the front of the abdomen, not in the back. So, yes, those kidneys don't give much problem to us. We leave them in there.
Richard, you got your answer. We thank you for that call. Very interesting. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, I just to say, so the new kidney is very susceptible to, it's right under in the belly there.
It's right there, absolutely, yeah.
So you, if you took a shot to the belly, it would be much more dangerous for you.
I guess so, but I think you could say that, but in general, we do okay.
Richard, thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yep. Thank you very much.
Okay, Linda in Kingston. It's got to be fast, Linda. We're almost out of time. Go ahead.
Yeah, quick question. Linda in Kingston, what numbers are the numbers for risk? What would be considered a high-risk number for systolic and diastolic? What would send someone to the heart doctor?
Linda, very important question.
Good.
The number to remember is, and this is for everybody, thanks for asking that question, 140 by 90. Anything above that is clearly associated with target organ injury, meaning thereby damage to organs, heart, the kidney, the heart, and the brain and peripheral vessels. So that number, one should be concerned and contact their primary care physician.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much. Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
We'll try to get you in, Douglas, from Petersham, Massachusetts, but it's got to be real fast.
Okay, real quick. This is Doug. I had a kidney taken out. I was covered in cancer 2 years ago. I'm 44. I'm a healthy guy. I'm very active. Am I going to make it to be an old man with one kidney without any problems?
Absolutely. Kidneys last for a long time, depending upon the match and how well the kidney was before it was placed in. They do, in general, very nicely.
Okay. Douglas, thank you so much for your good question. Appreciate it very much. All right. So that's it. We're about out of time. I told you in the beginning, Lynn and Dave, I told you, call now. Don't call at the end because everybody will have called. Did you listen? No. Okay, we're out of time. I want to thank everybody, including Lynn and Dave, for calling. Dr. Arif Asif, thank you so much for joining us today. You were terrific. I also want to thank our engineer, Zach Malloy, for all his good work. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for answering the phones today. Our producer is Ian Pickus. I'm Alan Shartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Stay tuned now for a news update.